listening to the home of cool, irreverent, and entertaining talk right here on LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Answers for the Family with Alan Cardoza right here on LA Talk Radio.
Welcome to another edition of Answers for the Family. I'm your host, Alan Cardoza, and each week I will bring you guests that will inspire and educate while bringing answers and options to raising children today and in our constantly changing future. Now, I will address issues such as locating a runaway teen, family crisis intervention, building self-esteem, dealing with addictions, and many ways to keep your family mentally, physically, and spiritually sound. Now, having over 30 years experience working with families in crisis, I've been fortunate to meet and work with some of the top professionals in many of the helping fields who are working to make this world a better place for all of us. And I'll continue to bring you some of these incredibly talented and caring people each week as we bring you Answers for the Family. Now, our guests today are Jennifer Gorman and Dr. Jennifer Henrity. Dr. Henrity, who goes by Jen, earned her bachelor's degree at Ohio Wesleyan University and her master's and PhD at the University of Memphis, where she was awarded the prestigious S. Howard Bartley Scholar Award. Jen has been in the therapeutic industry for over 11 years and has been published multiple times in such publications as Psychotherapy Research and the Clinical Psychology Review. Jennifer Gorman has been specializing in the treatment of eating disorders and related issues since 1991. She received her education at the University of Arizona and the University of Phoenix, earning a master's degree in counseling psychology in 1993. Prior to joining the Center for Discovery team in 2002, she served as primary therapist, director of outpatient programs, and Director of Family Therapy Programs at two well-known treatment centers in Arizona. At the Center for Discovery, she is responsible for the overseeing of daily operations at all of the Center for Discovery's eating disorders facilities and providing support and guidance to the treatment teams. Jen and Jennifer, welcome to Answers for the Family.
Thank you. Thank you for having us.
Well, I'm glad to have both of you on here. I know that this is an area that I think a lot of our listeners are not as familiar with. And I also think that there are some misperceptions out there in regards to eating disorders. So I think for starters, I mean, as a background for our listeners, can you briefly define eating disorders?
Sure. Let me talk about the three most common eating disorders. One is anorexia nervosa, and it is characterized by restricting of food, sometimes of fluid as well, and a low body weight, also poor body image. The bulimia nervosa is probably the second, and it is characterized by binge eating and then some compensatory behavior, so purging or exercise. And then the last most common is binge eating disorder, which is characterized by kind of eating a large amount and feeling really uncontrollable, and then some of the symptoms that go with that.
So let me ask, now who is affected by this? I think, again, this is an area where there may be some misperceptions. Who are you seeing that is affected by these types of eating disorders?
I think that there really are a lot of misperceptions, Alan, and you know, the stereotype has been that eating disorders are a problem of upper middle class teenage girls who are just obsessed with their appearance, and that's not what we're seeing. We do see a fair share of teenage girls with eating disorders, but the truth is that people of any race, any age, gender, or socioeconomic status can personally experience these disorders, or can be affected by a loved one suffering. And in fact, nearly half of all Americans know someone who's had an eating disorder, and it's estimated that anywhere between 8 and 24 million people currently are suffering from eating disorders. So it really does cross the spectrum. Boys can have eating disorders. We are seeing a lot more boys than we used to see, and we are also seeing adults that are having later onsets than we used to see. So it's really a disorder and a disease that can strike at any stage of life, and anybody can be vulnerable to an eating disorder. So it's not you know, it's not something that just affects a small group of people.
Well, and I think you bring up a great point when you just mentioned in regards to boys, because I think that there are a lot of people that think that this is something that is geared more towards women or towards girls. So today, I mean, what percentage of people with eating disorders, you know, are female?
I think that we're probably still looking at about 90% of what we see, but the problem is, as you said, because it's been identified as a girl's or a female disorder, there's still some shame and some difficulty identifying the illness in boys, and they may not feel as free to talk about it. They feel a little bit embarrassed or like it might be a girl's disease. So I think the more education that's out there and the more that boys seek treatment and benefit from treatment and are able to sort of share their experiences, hopefully that will be reduced and we'll be able to see better access to boys for boys to be able to receive appropriate treatment.
And in fact, the Center for Discovery just did a survey or has been doing a survey, and in the last few years we've come out with some really interesting numbers saying that statistically the same amount of boys as our girls are endorsing using some kind of compensatory behavior, so laxatives or purging, to lose or control their weight. So there may be a lot of boys that this is affecting that we just don't know about. Parents don't know to look for it. They don't know what to do with it. So it's something that we really are thinking a lot about.
Well, and as someone who has transported many of these young people that are dealing with eating disorders, I understand how serious it is. But, I mean, can you help our audience, I mean, really understand how serious this can be? You know, it's more than just, as you say, taking some laxatives or something.
Sure.
Yeah, eating disorders are the number one most fatal mental illness. So that alone is so serious. It's also, anorexia itself is the third most common chronic illness for teenage girls. So with early detection, it's just so important. The mortality rate is actually 12 times higher than the death rate associated with all causes of death for girls and young women aged 15 to 24. So eating disorders are incredibly serious.
Mm. There can be other consequences to eating disorders that without necessarily having death be the effect, but you can experience heart arrhythmias or a slowing down of the heart rate called bradycardia, blood pressure changes so that the blood pressure is very low, bone loss, which may not be reversible. There's a lot of co-occurring depression and anxiety. Sometimes there's cognitive impairment. When someone's brain becomes starved and is starved for a long time, you start to see changes in their ability to think and reason. And we see that a lot when someone comes into treatment, that they're just very cognitively slowed. And these are often kids who are really, really bright and have been very high performing. They start to slow down and their brain stops working. You'll see motor skills slow down and be impaired. Long-term possible consequences would be infertility. And then any kind of fractures related to osteoporosis that can have some long-term consequences in terms of pain and immobility. You can have constipation, insomnia, dizziness and lightheadedness and fainting. There can be fatal issues with electrolytes, or if your electrolytes, with particularly bulimia, if someone's potassium drops to a dangerously low level from repeated purging, they can have a sudden cardiac event that can be fatal. They can rupture their esophagus while they're purging, which can also cause them to bleed out. So these are very, very dangerous illnesses that have severe medical consequences, and I think sometimes they're minimized or almost trivialized in the media, where, you know, something, and you go to movies and you see a joke about the teenage girl with the eating disorder, and what you don't see is the teenage girl in the emergency room who's almost dead, or in fact is dead, mm-hmm. From these behaviors. They're very, very dangerous.
Additionally, the suicide has been estimated to be 32 times higher for teenage and young women with anorexia than in the general population. So I think that really speaks for the profound suffering that goes with this eating disorders.
Yes, definitely. And it sounds like also a lot of the things that you're talking about are things that can have long-term effects. So I think that from a parental standpoint, where we're dealing with our children, you know, at one point, I mean, that they can see it as, okay, well, you know, once they get through this, or once they, you know, this is a phase and so on and so forth. And from what I hear you saying, that isn't it. It really can do long-term damage to them that may be something that is irreversible.
That's absolutely true. And that's why I think early intervention is so important, and not waiting to get help is so important. most of these things, if we can intervene early, and especially if you have a younger child, and we can intervene early, we can be very successful in reversing and eliminating some of these behaviors. And those kids can be okay. They can wind up with relatively few long-term side effects. However, if an eating disorder is untreated and it goes on for years and years and years, as we see in our adult facilities, there are lots of irreversible medical complications that are very, very sad that as a result of people being either untreated for years or inadequately treated for years. So these are chronic illnesses. You need to be treated aggressively, and the early intervention and the early treatment makes a huge difference in the ability to reverse this and to minimize the kind of damage that you can see and the more serious consequences that happen.
Now, have we as a society somehow contributed to this problem from the standpoint of like wrongfully judging that those that are obese or that those that have some form of eating disorder, quote, brought this on themselves, rather than looking at it as someone with a psychological disorder that can be treated?
I definitely think the way that we view body appearance, the way that the high expectations we have on people these days contribute to it. I mean, you can't walk through a grocery store and not be glared at by so many pictures on the front of magazines. Excuse me. So I do think that has an effect. However, we know in some ways this is the perfect storm, eating disorders, so we can't blame any one thing. But I do think awareness, raising people's awareness, having people understand that this is something serious, that this is a psychological disorder and needs treatment and it needs to be taken seriously, is so important. And then you spoke about obesity. I wanted to go ahead and highlight that. In the DSM, which is kind of how we diagnose, it's kind of the Bible of the psychiatric and psychological world, obesity is not the same thing as an eating disorder, per se. So a binge eating disorder has certain characteristics that not everybody that has an issue with obesity has. However, I think if we can start to kind of shift our understanding of our relationship with food and with our bodies, I think the whole society would benefit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I couldn't agree more. Now, both of you are with the Center for Discovery, so can you introduce our audience a little bit about what it is that the Center for Discovery does? In other words, tell us more about, you know, what you do to deal with this issue.
Sure. The Center for Discovery was founded 17 years ago by our current CEO, Dr. Craig Brown, and his business partner, Jerry Carminio, because they really just wanted to help troubled adolescents who were struggling with all kinds of mental health issues and particularly substance abuse issues. They found that creating a therapeutic environment that was outside of the home had a huge impact on kids' ability to make some sustainable changes and on the family's ability to interact differently with their children. So about 14 years ago, they expanded the company to include the treatment of eating disorders, and we have found that that's a very successful way to treat kids with eating disorders at the residential level of care, where they step out of the environment where they've been very, very ill, and we are able to help the family and give a lot of intervention to the child and the family together while they're having a little bit of a time apart. We're based in Southern California, which is where our first programs were started, and we currently operate three separate divisions. We provide residential treatment to over 100 clients at any given time. We have a dual diagnosis division that offers treatment to adolescents who have issues with substance abuse or addiction. And we have the only freestanding mental health program in Southern California, which operates, it's a 25-bed unit. Also, we have a small 6-bed unit that treats mental health that focuses on treating kids with severe behavioral health issues such as depression, self-injury, anxiety, without co-occurring substance abuse or eating disorders. And then our eating disorder program, which is what we're talking about today mostly, we provide care to male and female adolescents aged 10 to 18, and also to adult females 18 and older who suffer from anorexia, bulimia, or binge eating disorder. We have four eating disorder programs in Southern California, three adolescents programs and one adult program. And then we also have programs in Northern California and in Washington State, and a program in Southport, Connecticut. And we are currently in the process of expanding somewhat rapidly. We're opening probably 4 other facilities around the country by the end of this year. So, and those will all be eating disorder residential programs.
Wow, that is phenomenal. We're going to take a break in a little bit, but for those of you that want to learn more while we're on our break, you can open up another screen on your computer. Obviously, if you're driving, you can't do this, but you can go to www.centerfordiscovery.com. You can take a look at their site. It really is. It's an excellent site, by the way. It's a lot of really good information on there, so you can bring up another screen right now. You can continue to watch that. We're talking with Jennifer Gorman and Dr. Jennifer Henrity, and the subject is eating disorders. We will be back after this public service announcement.
Hello, my name is Chet W. Sisk. I'm an 11-year life coach and the leadership development specialist for a nonprofit called the World Assembly of Youth. I'm going to provide a year of online life coaching for everyone that signs up and becomes a sponsor for our new online leadership development app called the LEAD Course. The course was created for young leaders in emerging countries and new leaders here in the United States. It teaches a model of leadership that includes sustainability, loving kindness, vision, feminine principles, personal empowerment, and connectedness. The tuition for this class is only $50 a year, but in some parts of the world, that's more than a month's salary. We have students in Niger, Bangladesh, Malawi, Namibia, Mongolia, Brazil, and more countries that simply can't afford the $50 a year tuition to take the class. Now, to offset our cost, we need you to sponsor them. If you sign up and donate the $50 sponsor rate, one of the students from the countries mentioned will be able to take the class and further the world into a new direction in leadership. We can win the hearts and minds of young leaders now, while the window is open. Now, this isn't a something-for-nothing proposition. You sponsor them, and we'll provide you with an online life coaching package that will empower you on your path. Go to www.leadtheshift.com. Click the Sign Up Now icon, register, then mark the Sponsor button. Be ready to receive your free online life coaching. Once you sign up, your life coaching starts immediately. We are in desperate need of at least 31 of you to sign up as soon as possible. Go to www.leadtheshift.com. Thank you.
And we're back. We are talking with Jennifer Gorman and Dr. Jennifer Henrity, and the subject is eating disorders. Now, when we went to break, you were telling us a lot about the organization as far as where you're located and such, but tell us a little bit about what you do that is different in the eating disorder programs that others either may not do, or what are the things that makes your program unique?
One of the things that I think makes our program really special is the small size of our programs. We tend to have 6-bed programs that run in residential neighborhoods and very comfortable homes. We're able to keep a very intimate and individualized treatment environment so that we're able to really, truly tailor what each client and family needs to them. We have 2 clinicians in each program that have a very small caseload and are able to spend a great deal of time focusing on each client and family and really meeting them where they are. And sometimes kids have been in multiple hospital programs, or they've failed outpatient program after outpatient program, and they can tend to come in feeling pretty hopeless and pretty guarded. And we try to really not get into a power struggle. We try to meet them with where they are when they come in and provide them with enough nurturing and enough structure to be able to make some movement. We've been doing this for 14 years as a company, and many of our therapists have been with us for a very long time. We're constantly seeking training for our teams, and we try to really bring a lot of compassion and hope to our families. A lot of clients come after years of suffering, and a lot of families have been really, really discouraged, and they may have even been told that their child is chronic or that their child is hopeless or not likely to do well. And we really try to restore a sense of hope and a sense of possibility. We have a lot of kids out there who've been through our programs who have recovered and are able to even at this point, it's kind of neat. After about 14 years, we're starting to see kids come back, and or they'll contact us and say, you know, I've been doing great for 10 years, and I have two kids, and I just wanted to thank you. And we've actually had a lot of that happen recently. So when that happens, you better believe that we go right back into the facilities and go, you know what, there was a kid that was here 10 years ago, just like you, and they sat right in this chair, and they were stuck, and they felt really hopeless, and I just got a phone call, and guess what? You know, they're doing great. They went to college. They're married. They have children, or they're doing, you know, they're living their dreams, and they don't have an eating disorder anymore. And I think some kids, when they're really in the depths of it, they can't imagine that possibility. So it's really great to be able to have the years behind us that we have to be able to say, you know what, we know this works. We know that if you keep walking and you keep taking the next steps, even though it might be hard and even though you might fall down sometimes, we know that this works and that we can, you know, we can get this phone call from you in a few years. And it's a really hopeful environment. It's a really loving and nurturing environment. It's playful. We try to be creative. We'll bring in whatever we need to bring to meet a kid where they are. And we had a really young kid in, a 10-year-old boy, I think, somewhat recently, who was just it didn't work to just sit in therapy and talk. So we brought in some Star Wars toys and some costumes and some lightsabers, and he did battle with his eating disorder. And it was really fun, but it really moved him. It made him, it created a shift in him. So we'll do whatever it takes. And I think that's what I'm the proudest of about our program, and I think that's what I think our families really respond to. And I think Jen may have some other things that she gets excited about. But
well, that all excites me too, but I'm also really excited about the research we are doing. So for the last 6 years, we've been collecting information both at intake and discharge to kind of see what happens over the course of treatment at Center for Discovery. And we're teaming up with Dr. Michael Strober at UCLA and the Feinstein Institute in New York to do some analyses. But some of our preliminary results show that we're really successful at restoring weight, at annihilating purging behavior, really almost down to zero. And then, you know, kids and adults with eating disorders will come in on the moderate to severe form with depression and anxiety, and we're able to see that when they leave, they're in the mild range. So we're really looking at the holistic person and returning them to their families as somebody who feels okay again, somebody who feels like themselves, somebody who feels better, and that's so exciting for us. So we're really looking forward to where the research part takes us as well, so that it's no big surprise to us, but it's so nice to have statistics that back up what we already knew, which this is working. Center for Discovery works.
Yeah, you know what? That is so beautiful. And you've touched on two things that I think are really important from the standpoint of feedback. One that you just said, which has to do with the statistics are there, and the statistics show that we're doing the right thing, that we're doing good things. And the other thing that you brought up that has to do with having those people call you 5-10 years down the line and tell you about it. And I want to share with everybody out there, having been in this industry a long time, this is why we do what we do. Okay, that's the payback. When you get that information from that person that calls you and says, you know what, I've turned my life around. You know what, I have this incredible family now. So, I mean, that is the reason. That is the reason that these two women are here. That's the reason that they do what they do. And the people that I have on this show, that's what they're doing. They're making a difference. They're making a positive difference. And that's our reward. When that person calls you, that's the one. Am I right?
Absolutely.
You couldn't agree more.
Sometimes I think doing this kind of work can be difficult and challenging, and there's a lot of sadness and you hear a lot of things that are hard. And I think you're absolutely right, Ellen. It balances out so much to hear from a kid or a family to say, hey, you know, you helped us. You what you did was effective, and what we did together changed our lives. It just absolutely is what gets professionals in the field getting up and going at it again, especially at this level of care. Residential level of care is a pretty intense level of care. We're dealing with very, very sick people when they come to us. So it can be challenging, but I think the rewards are so great that's why we do it. You're absolutely right.
Yeah, and that's one of the reasons why, I mean, at the end of each show, I really love the success stories, and I'll get to that soon in regards to a success story. But, you know, that's what I like to close with because, again, that is the reason. And I'm looking at the screen now. I've got an instant message coming across, and I think this refers to a little bit about kind of what parents and such are dealing with. This person says, I am a meal coordinator for two high schools in our district. I would estimate that 10% of our students have eating disorders. Having been in this job for almost 20 years, I have struggled with the school board and administrators who say they have budgets that do not allow for healthier food choices. I believe the sugars and chemicals in our foods are, quote, addictive, and kids are either overeating and getting heavier or taking dangerous pills and other methods to keep the weight off. At the core, I believe the parents and the school administrators must take some responsibility for the problems we are creating. And then their question to you is, what do you feel we can do to change this problem?
That's a big question. I think, you know, I think that it's a really valid observation and also a very big forum to address the school system and what happens with kids when they're outside of the home. I think, you know, that obviously there's a lot of factors that contribute to unhealthy eating habits and eating disorders as well. We really try to work from the model of balance, variety, and moderation so that we don't talk about bad foods or good foods so much as being able to have a healthy, balanced variety in all things, in exercise, in food, in relationships, in emotions. So I think, you know, there's certainly a need to have healthier choices and healthier lifestyle choices. Some of that has to obviously come from the family setting, and I think the schools can reinforce that. But I think what we're looking at is, in terms of these really, really difficult and painful eating disorders, are underlying emotional pain and discomfort that are causing kids to choose behaviors and make choices that are really, really destructive. So I think there are two levels here. There's sort of a big system issue where, as a society, we're becoming less healthy or maybe less active, and kids are tending to put on weight, and that's definitely an issue. In terms of what we do, we're probably looking more towards an underlying pain and an underlying set of circumstances that would lead a kid to make some choices that are very drastic and severe and self-destructive. Anything
else? Well, and I think for our kind of clients, for the people with eating disorders versus just the obesity issue in itself, food becomes the enemy, and food becomes something that they use to beat themselves up with, to punish themselves, to reward themselves. It becomes so important in some ways, and so rather than trying to label it and put shame, I mean, if we talk about bad foods or junk foods, in some ways that we're putting emotion with that food, we're putting shame with that food, and we don't really find that to be effective. And so it's really kind of taking the power away from food and talking about what, just as Jen said, what's going on underneath, what are the underlying issues, what are the emotions, and rather than communicating with food or soothing with food, talking about having more effective and healthy coping skills.
I think you bring up a great point when you say soothing with food. I mean, is that one of the main issues that you're now going to try to find what is the core problem that's going on, because they're using food to soothe, but taking away the food isn't going to change the fact unless you get into that core. So how do you determine what that issue is so that you can work with it?
Exactly. I think that one of the things that we see when they get into our environment, and we in some ways do limit their ability to use their coping skills. They don't have access to food to binge on. We're monitoring that they're eating regular meals and snacks every day. We're monitoring the bathroom so that they're not able to have access to the behaviors that they've been using. What we see is emotions start to come up. So mm-hmm. Without the behaviors and without the coping, the negative coping skills, you start to see sadness, you start to see anger, you start to see kids sometimes express that they want to harm themselves or that they feel like dying. And that's a way where we really get to, you know, what was going on underneath this before you started using the food to make yourself feel better, or using restricting food, because anorexia is the same thing. It works. It makes them feel better when they feel like they're in control and they feel like they've been able to be successful at losing weight and controlling what they're doing, they feel good. They, for a while, it works. And so when we start to take that away, we have to be very careful mm-hmm. and gentle and realize that we're taking away something that, as destructive and awful as it looks on the outside, inside that kid or that adult who's struggling, that has been their safety net. So we're very careful and delicate and respectful of the fact that these behaviors didn't just come on a whim. These behaviors are serious enough and they're indicative of really an underlying problem that deserves delicate care and delicate attention. And so I think that's the unraveling that happens in therapy and that happens in our milieus and our environments where we're very supportive and very available to help kids process what is going on underneath, what is it, and when did you start to feel so lonely or so sad or so hurt or so angry and not know what else to do with it that you started to do these things.
And Jen, do you have something to add to that?
Well, and I think, again, it's less about the sugar
right.
or less about fast food availability and really more of kind of a perfect storm of things that are going on. And so kind of shifting the focus away from the food in some ways and reaching out. So for this particular question, you know, if you think that a kid is suffering, then I would say reach out, talk to the counselor, let's get some help, get a professional assessment, because the longer these children suffer in silence, it becomes more difficult to treat. You know, it becomes more part of who they think they are, what they deserve. And so the quicker you can get help, the better.
Oh, I like that. Now, I know there's a lot of parents who may be concerned that their child may have an eating disorder. Can you help them identify certain warning signs that may indicate that their child may have an eating disorder and need treatment?
Sure. I think just obviously seeing changes in their eating patterns where they seem to be eating less or not eating certain food groups. They'll start to avoid eating in front of other people, perhaps. Or you may see them eating a large amount of food or eating more rapidly or more slowly. Something that's different, something that's not your kid. You notice that something changed. You sometimes will see eating disorders start out of, something, a desire to have a healthy change. They'll say, I'm going to start eating healthier, or I'm going to go on a diet for a little bit. And maybe it's a kid who has who's a little bit overweight, and so the parents think, okay, great, that's fine. Let's support this, and it'll spiral out of control. So you never know. You never know when something that's looking like a healthy eating change or a healthy pattern change is internally becoming something a little bit more difficult for the kid. Go ahead, Jen.
And so along with changes in eating patterns, you'll almost always see, or at least there'll always be something going on with mood. So there may be noticeable changes, even in their personality. Sometimes parents will come in and say, this doesn't even feel like my kid. I don't know what happened. But there may be high anxiety, conflict, or crying at mealtime. So those are common, especially with something like anorexia. Although sometimes parents will say, they always put on a happy face. Like there'd be times where I would think, this is a really sad thing going on. They'd come home and talk about being bullied, but they'd have this smile. So in some ways, there's either a masking or there's an increase of anxiety and isolation. They lose interest in the things that they once really were interested in. Other things, other warning signs, so using the bathroom or showering right after the meals, this can be to kind of self-induced vomiting, finding wrappers or hoards of food in their room, unexpected weight loss, preoccupation with cooking for others or watching cooking shows but they refuse to eat themselves, defensiveness when eating behaviors are discussed. So if there's a real pushback, I don't want to talk about this, uh-huh. isolation or withdrawal from their friends, lack of interest in things, as I said, sometimes non-food related acting out behavior. So grades may drop, although it's important to note that a lot of our clients are really high achievers when it comes to school. So they may have all A's, and parents will say, their grades were great. I just didn't think this could be such an issue if their grades were so high. So that's something to keep in mind.
One of the things that I think is really important that relates to what Jen just brought up is in terms of getting a kid with an eating disorder, getting treatment for them, sometimes it's really hard because oftentimes these kids have been just the ideal child. They've been perfect. They've been the kind of kid that you could always trust, that always did the right thing, that you had a good relationship with. So when you start to confront a kid like this and they tell the parents that everything's fine, or they tell the parents that they can handle it on their own, the parent's tendency is to want to believe this child. This child has always been believable. They've always been trustworthy. They've always been a kid who's done great and managed well. So these kids can get into really severe trouble before the parents are able to respond appropriately, because the parents are trying to do the right thing. They're trying to say, you know, I've always been able to trust her. I don't want to damage my relationship by doing something, by forcing her to go to a therapist or by forcing her to go and get checked out by the pediatrician. So we have seen kids like this who have gotten just desperately ill because the parents have not responded out of a desire to maintain the relationship that they've always had, and out of, you know, really with the best of intentions, thinking, I'll know. My kid would, of course, tell me. Mm-hmm. And, you know, these kids have been hiding horrifying behaviors because the eating disorder has become such a secret world for them that the parents truly didn't know. And you'll see alarming weight loss that's been covered up with baggy clothing. These kids are experts at hiding the behaviors and hiding even the weight loss. So I think for parents to really trust your gut, if you know something's wrong, even though everything that's being said tends to deny it, you have to trust your gut. Someplace in, most of these parents will say, I knew, but I just couldn't believe it, or I just wanted to give her the benefit of the doubt. So I think it's so important to if you feel like something's wrong, it can't do any harm to get an assessment, or to at least go that first level of go to your doctor or go to someone that you trust that can assess further to see if everything's okay.
Yeah, and I love the fact that it's just get the information, you know, get the information, whatever the information may be, and know, as long as your child knows that you're getting this out of love, you know, I'm gathering this information out of my love for you. You know, I think that you can't go wrong from that standpoint. And also, for those of you, if you were trying to write down some of those red flags, you can go to the website as well. They have a list of red flags, like for teen and child eating disorders. There's red flags that are listed down there that you can take a look at and see, are these some of the things that you're seeing that maybe, you know, as Jennifer just said, you may not want to acknowledge that you're seeing it, but it's there. And again, the website is www.centerfordiscovery.com. Now, we're going to take another break. We will be right back.
Founded over 25 years ago to meet the needs of families in crisis, West Shield specializes in resolving adolescent issues that negatively impact the family. From preteen to young adult, we are experienced and qualified to help. We offer solutions which include referrals to a network of top professionals internationally that we work very closely with in the fields of educational consulting, psychology, and psychiatry. Our in-home crisis intervention care program helps to stabilize families and bring effective resolution. We are supported by our licensed investigation company that enables us to offer legal and expert services for locating runaway teens and more. Our therapeutic transportation services help to ensure that adolescents in crisis are safely provided transportation to specialized schools and programs with unmatched experience and success. Simply put, West Shield Adolescent Services is the best solution when your family is facing personal crisis. Call 1-800-899-8585 and let us help you.
And we're back. You're listening to Answers for the Family. We're talking with Jennifer Gorman and Dr. Jennifer Henrity, and the subject is eating disorders. This is something that the Center for Discovery does in multiple locations, and we were just talking about, I mean, as parents, you know, what are some of the identifying signs that we can see with our child? And obviously with our child, we have a little bit more control. We still are able to make some decisions for them. But what would you say to the individuals who themselves or their spouse or significant other have an eating disorder and need treatment? How would you invite them into that discussion?
Oh, Alan, it is such a scary time, probably. So if somebody can hear me that is struggling, I think the first thing I would say is that it's not your fault. Anything to deserve this. And then the second thing I would say is that recovery is possible. Healing can happen, and not to give up. Center for Discovery can help, and we would like to help. So I think that's probably the first thing I would say.
And Jennifer?
I agree. I think the thing is to, you know, sometimes people who are suffering with eating disorders, especially with adults, you've been perhaps through many, many different things and tried many, many times to stand back up. And I think that can be hopeless. And sometimes people really just want to give up. I would say, I would agree with, you just keep walking. Sometimes you fall down and you get back up, and you never know which time is going to be the time that you're ready to get a little bit more recovery. I think people with eating disorders tend to have some black and white thinking and think either I'm going to be perfectly recovered or I'm going to be horribly sick. And I think that what's really important to know about recovery is that there's a middle, and that there's a way that you just keep walking towards becoming healthier and towards accepting help and towards maybe making it just a little bit better. And there's a time to just start and take the first couple of steps without thinking about, you know, this means I'm never going to be able to do these things that I don't think I can give up, or this means I'm going to be fat, or this means I'm going to lose friendships, or this means my family's going to have to know all my secrets. It doesn't have to mean anything other than taking the first step and starting to treat yourself a little bit better, just day by day. And I think that's important to start, just to start and to not give up.
And something else to kind of highlight is that we've been talking about our residential facilities, but we also have an intensive outpatient program. So it's for somebody who might not need that, might not be at the level where they need to go live someplace else for a little bit to get their behaviors under control. Uh-huh. Intensive outpatient is a couple hours after school or after work, and Center for Discovery offers that as well. And so I think the big thing that we would say is give us a call. Let me provide the number really quickly. It's 800-760-3934, and we can help you find whatever level of care you need, discuss treatment options. If we're not the place for you, we've got ties with really all the resources in Southern California. We can help you find the people that can help you.
And outside of California as well. I think we can refer you to professionals all over the country. And even if we had to find, we found professional teams outside of the country for people. So our admissions department is really committed to finding help for people, no matter where, whether it's here or not. And I would bet that a great percentage of what they do is find resources for people who don't wind up even coming here.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So we really care about finding people the appropriate help.
Now, one of the issues that is brought up a lot has to do with the body acceptance or body image. Tell us about, again, body acceptance, body image, and why this is such an important issue, and how does someone practice having a healthier body image?
I think when you're talking about body image with eating disorders, the first thing to be clear about is that with anorexia nervosa, the distorted body image that we talk about, and you see, you know, people who, when you and I look at them, are emaciated, they truly experience themselves as being fat or obese or overweight. So that means that when they look in the mirror, they really see that. So that's, I think, hard for people to believe because it's such a distortion and it seems kind of crazy. And that's a function of the illness, especially at severe stages, that's very confusing and very hard for people who don't suffer to understand, but it's very real, and it's probably the piece that keeps people in the illness, because as they start to gain weight and they start to eat, they can't tolerate the feeling that they're becoming fatter and fatter. And it is a distortion, but it's a distortion that we really have to help people struggle through, because it absolutely pulls people out of recovery. For regular people, or for most people, I think for women particularly, I think we know a lot of people struggle with poor body image. They wish they were a little thinner here. They wish they were a little taller. Or they wish something was a little smaller or something was a little bigger. And I think it's really common, and really common in the media and in the culture, for people to be negative about their bodies. And you look at movies or you look at magazines, as Jen was saying earlier, and we're bombarded with things that we should be doing to improve ourselves and things that we should be dissatisfied with. And I think it's a huge problem. And I don't know, you know, what we try to focus on in terms of improving body image, rather than completely eliminating the distortion, or completely saying, you know, oh, just tell yourself you're beautiful and everything will be great, because that doesn't tend to work. We start to focus on, you know, what are the wonderful things that our bodies can do? What do they allow us to do in the world? What kind of activities can you do because you have a body? And what parts of your physical body do you feel relatively positive about? I think we try to build on what's already positive or whatever is relatively functional already. And I also think one thing that you can do and that everyone can do is to take the focus off of the negativity and to stop making negative statements about their bodies. I think particularly parents have to be aware that when you're standing in the mirror saying, oh my gosh, I'm so fat, or I'm so disgusting, or how can I leave the house, and you have children that are listening, they are listening in ways you can't even imagine. They're getting their idea of how to feel about themselves and how to feel about their bodies from you. So I think it's really important, as much as you can, to improve positive statements and to seek ways to improve positivity about the body, but crucially important to eliminate the constant barrage of negativity.
Yeah, I think what Jennifer's saying is just so important, because there's research that almost half, 42% of first to third grade girls want to be thinner. So these are 8-year-old little girls. 81% of 10-year-olds are afraid of being fat, and 80% of American women are dissatisfied with their appearance. So this issue is really not just about eating disorders. It's kind of countrywide, and if we can start to take the focus off appearance just a bit, and if we can all be kind of kinder to ourselves about our bodies, I think that's a big step forward for everyone.
And I couldn't agree more. And I just looked up, we've got about 2 minutes left. Can you share with us a success story or two, just to give an idea, something that is sort of general, to the point in which there'll be a lot of people out there going, you know what, that sounds like me, or that sounds like my child?
I can talk about we just recently got a phone call from somebody who I actually treated at our Lakewood facility probably 10 years ago. And this is a kid who had been significantly overweight, a very tall kid. And so they had been probably 40 or 50 pounds overweight when they started their eating disorder. So the beginning of their eating disorder, which was a very severe anorexia nervosa, for about 40 or 50 pounds, all that this child heard was how wonderful and how beautiful she looked. What happened was she didn't stop. And so this child wound up being about 80 pounds at 5'10". And by the time we got her, her mind was so stuck that there was almost nothing else there besides an eating disorder. And we worked with her. It really was months and months of not knowing kind of who else was in there. And this is a kid who, I think she was with us for about probably 4 months, very, very physically ill, took a long time to refeed. Her family worked so hard, and we didn't quite know how she was going to do. And I just heard from this family that she has two kids, that she continued her recovery. And this was a recovery. This was ugly. This was this child crying in our office every single day, how much she didn't want to be fat, how much she couldn't do it, how she was hiding her food. She was very, very difficult to treat and struggled and suffered a lot through treatment. And the fact that it's stayed with her, and that she's now has two children and she's doing well and she's having a life, and her dad reports that she's not struggling with an eating disorder at all and seems to be very, very happy. It really, really made me happy. Sometimes they'll call back and say, I'm not sure you remember me. And I think, you know, of course we remember you. I could never forget her.
Well, that is beautiful. I wish that we had more time. You guys are great. You're doing wonderful things out there. Again, for those of you listening, it's www.centerfordiscovery.com. If you're not able to write that down, go to our website, answers4thefamilyblog.com, and we have all the information on how to get a hold of the Center for Discovery. And again, thank you so much again for coming on, but also, you know, for what you're doing out there, because I think part of it is just getting the education to people to understand what's really going on, shining a light on it, and I hope that we've been able to help you do that.
Thank you so much, Alan.
Thank you, Alan, very much.
You're very welcome. And for everybody out there, please be with us again next week as we will continue to bring you people that can help in whatever areas that you want to make your family the very best that it can be. Thank you. Bye now.
You're listening to Answers for the Family with Alan Cardoza, right here on LA Talk Radio.